Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey guys, it's Candace, and you are listening to Directionally Challenged. We kind of thought we'd have it all figured out by the time we're in our 30s, but surprise, we don't. I definitely don't, and that's okay. Kayla's out today, so you're stuck with me. Don't worry. We have recorded a hilarious episode of Directionally Challenged for you today. I'm so excited. Just call me Jesse Spano. I am just dancing in my boots, sweating from my head. Today, we're sitting down with a dear friend of mine, Josh Blue. Okay, if you do not know who Josh Blue is, you have been living under a rock. I don't know if you just watched him on America's Got Talent. He was one of the top finalists. I have had the privilege of knowing Josh for a very long time. I was introduced to him by way of my husband. They are both Denver locals, Denver natives. And ever since I met him, and I've been fortunate enough to see his stand-up set many times over the years, he is so hilarious, not only off the stage, but especially on the stage. So here's a little blurb about our buddy Josh Blue. Following his groundbreaking win on NBC's Last Comic Standing in 2006, Josh Blue has risen through the ranks to become a well-established headliner at venues throughout the world. In 2018, Josh has crushed his set on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. In the same year, he was honored with a performance at the William H. Macy Gala at the prestigious Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal, Canada. Critics have said Josh is not a cerebral palsy comic. He is a comic who happens to have cerebral palsy. However, his closest friends also describe him as a D-bag. I didn't say that. That's just part of his bio. So I don't think you're a D-bag, Josh. I'm sure maybe you and my husband would joke around like that. But I do know that you are freaking hilarious. We cuss in this episode, so I'm just going to say it. You're fucking hilarious. And I could not be more excited to introduce our guest today, Josh Blue, right after the break. And we're back with Josh Blue. Josh. I'm very excited to be making my husband, Joe King, jealous today by sitting down and talking with you. When did you guys meet each other, by the way? Because that's how you and I met, was through my husband, obviously Denver native. You're Denver. How did you guys meet? When was this?
Yeah, I think it was from our mutual friend, James Hahn, who is doing piano. He's an amazing pianist. And I think he got Joe ticket. Like, Joe had said he wanted to come see my show. And I think James hooked it up, and then it was all downhill from there.
Well, we've had many nights hanging with a beer in our hand. So this is a little different. It's the afternoon. I could have a beer in my hand. I don't. It's just a sparkling water. But I'm really excited to ask you questions that I don't think I would normally be asking if we were just shooting the shit, hanging out on one of our porches in L.A. or Denver or Nashville. So I want to kick off asking, I think that, you know, obviously this is an important question, especially for who you are. So when was the first moment that you looked around a room and realized, holy shit, I'm really funny?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it was probably in high school. I was in a physics class, and we had a very young teacher. He was like fresh out of college. And so we weren't that much younger than he was. And I had said the F word out loud, and he goes, "Hey, Blue, do you kiss your mother with that mouth?" And without skipping a beat, I go, "No, I kiss yours." And the whole class, there was like a pause, and then everybody laughed. Like, even he laughed. Like, I was like, oh, that was fun.
You're like, I want to do that again.
Yeah. I've always just loved making people laugh, but I think that really sticks out to me, is like getting the whole room to laugh at the same thing was pretty cool.
I feel like that's most comedians, is like they have that one moment, that one memory specifically, whether it's grade school, high school, middle, like somewhere in school, like a school or a camp usually, yep, where they just have this like magical comedic, where all the stars line up. I feel like it's very similar to a lot of people, like the first time that they like kill it on stage. You know, whenever someone goes up to do their first stand-up, I feel like it's either, I've heard they go up on stage and they like absolutely kill the first time, and they're like, and then bomb the second time, but then they just keep doing it because they love it. Or it just, they get bit by the bug that like first, like it just takes that like one big night or that one big joke.
It's just very addictive. So once you get that laugh, you want that feeling again, and you find a way to make it happen again and again and again.
I feel like another thing that you hear often with comedians is how much their childhood played into them wanting to become a comedian, and basically their parents being their like ultimate kind of like cookie jar of comedy gold. Was that for you? Like, are your parents very funny or unaware of how funny they are? Or did you have like unique child circumstances of
yeah. I mean, so my parents are very, like my dad is a professor. He speaks 13 languages, just like a brilliant man, but very dry sense of humor, very sarcastic. And then I have three older siblings, and they're all very sarcastic and dry. And that was just a very wry, smart humor in the house growing up. And I don't think my mom is particularly a very funny person, but she gets it.
She's like a good audience.
Yeah. So, you know, I could be funny to her, and she would be impressed that like, wow, you're pretty young for saying something that like putting these two pieces together to make a joke or whatever.
Were you watching stand-up comedy or listening to it at all growing up, or?
You know, I didn't get to that till later. I mean, I remember like my buddy stole his brother's cassette tape of Eddie Murphy and hiding under a blanket to listen to the swear words and giggle at it, you know? And I remember just laughing at the stuff that wasn't even the funny part. He just said rubber penis, and we thought that was the funniest thing we'd ever heard in our life. You know, we didn't even get the joke. We just heard that. I was like, woo, that's it.
Genius. Yep, yeah, comedy brilliant. Gold.
Yeah. So I definitely remember just loving to laugh and have those giggle fits and seeing that it happened more often than not when I was with friends. You know, we just laugh till you couldn't breathe.
Well, obviously, a huge part of your act is the fact that you have cerebral palsy and that you live yep. with it. At what age were you diagnosed, or what age did your parents yeah. have a talk with you, or what was that experience like when you were younger? Also, having these very like hilarious three older siblings with like dry humor yeah. and a father with that.
Yeah. Well, so I was born in Cameroon, West Africa. I don't know if we ever discussed that.
We have never talked about that, no.
Yeah, I was born in Africa. My dad was teaching English over there, and I happened along, and they didn't have all the proper medical facilities there, so it wasn't a smooth C-section, and basically I almost died, and they medevaced me from Cameroon to New York, like on the third day of my life. Like I flew wow. around the world. And then I got some good, medical treatment there and came back, and they just weren't sure as far as what the outcome would be. You know, babies are pretty floppy anyway. So they didn't really know that I had palsy till later in the development stages. My mom said one time I was sitting up, like just learning to sit up, and then she handed me a cracker, and I just fell over because I paid attention to the cracker, but I didn't have enough going on to concentrate on both things. So the muscles kind of took a break while I went for the more important snack.
Was that, I mean, obviously... We're talking about comedy. We're talking about being young and, you know, delivering a joke in high school and having everyone laugh. I mean, did you feel like you had to kind of perform to a certain element or beat anyone to, you know, beat anyone to something that they would say? Like kids are very
yeah,
blunt.
I mean, there's definitely some of that was going on, you know. I was one of the only disabled kids in my school. Me and my friend, Nick. We were the first palsy kids to go through mainstream school. So there was a lot of learning in that where, you know, the teachers have never taught a palsy kid or a disabled kid, you know? So, but then you're right, you know, kids could be really mean, but I was really quick on it. Like, and I would make the joke before you did, or you'd make a joke and then I'd make a better joke about you, and then you look pretty dumb when you're getting made fun of by the disabled guy. So it wasn't in their benefit to mess with me. Plus, I've just always been a people person. So I didn't necessarily have one clique that I stuck to. I could go between cliques and everybody knew me and would welcome me in, you know?
And then how do you get to comedy then? I mean, you were also a Paralympian. You were a soccer player. So you went to the Paralympics, which you talked about in America's Got Talent, which was hilarious. Like the, you know, your retelling of these experiences in your set, you know, you obviously spent a lot of time doing sports. So then how do you go from sports to comedy? And when did that light bulb go off for you?
Well, you know, it's really weird. It was always kind of in tandem. I always loved being an athlete. Like when I was a kid, I played a lot of street football and I was a really good wide receiver. I was super fast and, you know, being disabled a lot of times, other times kids would underestimate me. And then, you know, six touchdowns later, they're like, we got to figure out how to cover that guy. So I've always just enjoyed being like athletic and kind of, I want to say show-offy. As far as it goes, like I like to show you that just because I'm disabled, I can beat you. Even though I have palsy, I'm going to give you a run for your money in whatever sport we're going to be playing. You know, it's just kind of a really fun thing where I also like talking trash. So the humor was there while doing sports. And that just kind of grew and grew. Like, I discovered doing stand-up comedy in college. And then I also tried to, I played soccer in college. And then once I got out of college, I found the comedy scene around the same time I found the Paralympics. And all of a sudden, these two crazy lifestyles skyrocketed in different directions. So I just became the big star in Denver and started doing national stuff, doing comedy. And then I started traveling the world playing soccer. Like, what is happening right now?
Would you say that you're fueled by people underestimating you?
I really do love that, honestly. I mean, if it gives me a bit of a reason to do better, is because you don't think I can. And I don't know, nothing I enjoy more than watching some able-bodied person slack jaw when I score another goal or whatever it is,
Your father is a professor. What's funny is anyone who comes home to tell their parents, like, hey, I'm going to play soccer, like, professionally, competitively, and I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. Like, those are both, like, a soccer in America is already, like, you know, it's not, like, it's a sport that, but football, baseball, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, soccer is considered more widely, like, a European sport.
Definitely.
And then also stand-up comedy, everyone's like, oh, you're going to be a, like, you know, I remember the idea of telling your parents, like, I'm going to be an actress. And they're like, oh, are you? Well, we're waiting to welcome you home.
We just sent you through 4 years of college. Yeah. You're not doing that. I was very fortunate in the fact that by the time my parents saw me do stand-up, I had already been doing it for a little while, and I already was making waves in the scene. So. And my parents have always been very supportive. You know, my mom said, she's like, I saw something like that for you. I didn't know it would be stand-up, but I always saw you being some sort of speaker or entertainer or something.
Someone in the spotlight.
Yeah. And then soccer, not too many people can just decide to try out for the Olympic team and then be on the team, I wish I had known about it earlier in my life, honestly, because I could have been playing for so many more years. But I found that, like, when I was 22 years old or something.
What is one of your greatest memories? I mean, I know we're coming off of the Summer Olympics of this year, and it is just something, especially given all that's occurred in the world in the last 2 years. It is an event that just brings the whole world together in hope. Do you have fun memories of that experience that you are reminded of when you see the Olympics on the TV?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of just amazing. I've been to 8 countries playing soccer for the U.S., which is pretty cool to be able to say, just being able to say you represented your country in anything is pretty cool. But going to the Olympics, I was in Athens in 2004. And, that's the birthplace of the Olympics. It's pretty cool to be able to go there and see all that. And just being in the Olympic Village is always one of my fondest memories. It's not even playing. It's just being in this community of all disabled people. Like, I never experienced anything like that. Like if you were able-bodied in the Paralympic Village, you were the minority by far, It's pretty cool to just finally be around everybody that had something going on.
Is that the only time you've had that experience?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I went to like a disabled camp when I was really young, but after that, my parents just sent me to able camp. There's only so many times I can beat the girl in a race with her legs that are 2 different lengths.
So you come home from the Olympics and you start to really just focus on comedy. At what point were, those are two also very different lifestyles. I mean, the life of an athlete is just, you know, training, I would assume, just training, focus. And then the life of comedy is obviously a lot of focus. You got to write. You got to like really, you know, it's hard work to have a good set. But it's also like late nights, common, like dirty comedy clubs, bars, yeah. Like, you know, just constantly being on your toes, constant travel. I mean, those are just two very opposite experiences. When did you immediately just fall in love with the comedy lifestyle? Or was that just, I would assume also as like a man in your 20s, that's a pretty fun lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you described it pretty well. That's what it is. It's staying up late drinking and doing shows and hanging out with other horrible comedians and partying and doing fun stuff. And then, you know, and then you're supposed to get up early at 6 the next morning and jog. And those two don't go hand in hand well. And I definitely put more energy into the stand-up side than the Olympic side.
Well, you've done very well in the stand-up side.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a minute.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's time to get more in 2024. I know for me, one of my goals is to feel really strong this year. And honestly, so far, so good. Because that's where 310 Nutrition comes in. It's helping me and our listeners in the new year with protein and super rich food products with so many options and flavors. Right now I have the chocolate bliss and caramel sundae, and they are both so delicious. I have to hide them from my husband so that he doesn't steal them too. They're a triplex protein blend, plant-based proteins that include pea, brown rice, and pumpkin that leave me feeling full. 310 Nutrition also has a hydrate electrolyte drink mix. My favorite is the peach mango flavor. So not only am I hydrating and drinking water, I have an electrolyte blend, vitamin blend, and it's sugar-free. With one stick of hydrate mix into 16 ounces of water, and it can provide the same amount of hydration equal to drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water. Thank you. This way I can keep my resolution, keep feeling strong, have greater focus, feel refreshed, and maintain my hydration without having to drink as much. One of my favorite refreshing water enhancers they have is the lemonade flavor. It gives me energy. This one's also sugar-free. It's used with real lemons and it's pH balanced. And this also offers the same hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. Right now, 3-10 is celebrating a new year of goals with code CHALLENGED and giving our listeners 50% off up to $100 for your first order. With so many sample packs, new products, it's really fun and easy to put together an order or start a subscription on products that you know you'll use and will help you keep your resolution. So go to 310nutrition.com and use the code CHALLENGED right now for 50% up to $100 for your first order. That's 310-nutrition.com and use code CHALLENGED. It's all the good stuff your body needs in flavors you crave. So be healthier effortlessly.
And we're back.
There was a show on called Last Comic Standing, huge show, and you were the winner of the 2006 season of Last Comic Standing. Did that completely change the game? Had you already established like a healthy fandom, obviously within Denver?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was already becoming pretty well known in Denver. I had started doing touring like around like a lot of college gigs and all that, but I hadn't really broken into the comedy club scene yet. I was more of like, let's bring this disabled comedian into a college for Disabled Awareness Week, you know, stuff like that. And then once Last Comics hit, it just blew the doors off everything. I've been doing 200 shows a year since Last Comic Standing.
That's incredible.
Been doing that. And then obviously now that I just did AGT, again, the doors have been blown off again. So it's pretty cool. Like, it's pretty crazy ride that I'm on right now. But yeah, Last Comic definitely opened all these avenues, and I started playing the comedy club scene and just be, you know, like I said, I've been doing this since 2006, just touring. You name the spot, I've been there.
What goes into writing your set? I mean, I know that, especially in your early years, did you feel, obviously you've spoken a lot about living with cerebral palsy and the moments that you live within your life that you find like hilarity in and pure comedy in that other able-bodied people would completely miss out on. Did you make like a conscious decision in your early comedy days, or did that kind of develop later on of like, okay, guys, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about palsy, but also there's a whole bunch of other things that I want to talk about too. Have you ever felt that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember a time where I realized, like, because I was doing stand-up in college and getting pretty well-known on campus for being a stand-up, which is weird, and I was talking all about everything but the palsy at the time, and then when I would mention it, it would get this bigger response of people, like, connecting to it. You know, I believe everybody has a disability. No matter who you are, you got something going on that you can relate to being held back or something. And I felt like the more I was able to be raw and real about my own situation and not ignore the fact that I do have cerebral palsy, then I was able to then dive into the other topics even more, because I brought you into a level of comfort with who I am, raw facts about palsy, and then I can talk about being a dad, whether that's a palsy related thing or just being a dad that everyone can relate to.
And you found that just kind of experimenting with your own comedy. Did you have other comics that you began to know at a younger age that kind of took you under their wing, or that you know, kind of got an insider information of it? Because I would assume, you know, for I mean, I'd make the assumption for everybody, but I'm sure others, some people don't feel this, but that it's difficult getting on stage and being incredibly vulnerable and not only putting yourself out there to be funny, but so much good humor lies in truth, you know, and so finding that balance of like, you know, wanting to obviously make everyone laugh and then also, you know, being vulnerable on a stage within that as well.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I definitely did buddy up with a couple of comedians, local comedians, and we were inseparable. That was a big part of it. It was like they were older comedians, had been through the scene before, and they just kind of took me under their wing. So that was interesting. Very lucky to have those dudes in my life that just, you know, we'd hang out outside of the club. You know, we'd go get dinner together before the show, you know. And another big thing that I feel very fortunate is that where I moved in Denver, when I first moved to Denver, it was a 10-minute bike ride from downtown Comedy Works. And they brought me in, like, once I established myself, I could go to any show, anytime, and I would literally go 6 nights a week to the comedy club and just sit there in the back, drink beer, and watch whoever the comic was. And I got to just like see how they would change their show day to day, or I could hear what the staff was saying about them, or I, you know, and learning about how the whole machine of a comedy club works. And I just embedded myself in one of the best clubs in the country, and I just got to learn and watch and be part of this big machine, and it's pretty cool. And you know, getting to see comics that are these, you know, I saw Brian Regan, I've seen Chappelle, I've seen, you know, you name the comic, they love this club, and I've got to work with most of these people, and just amazing to get to sit in the audience too and just be an observer. And then also on the other side, I got to see a lot of comics that I didn't like. And I think I learned a lot more from them. Like, okay, I don't want the server to talk about me the way they're talking about this guy, you know? And I also realized that the servers in a comedy club have a lot of say in what goes on there.
Oh, interesting.
They're the ones that see every show. So they report back to the heads of places and go, hey, this guy came in. He was a sweetheart. He was fucking hilarious. And he tips well, you know? So then they're like, oh, well, we definitely want him back next year, you know? So it's like building that friendship too.
I mean, we live in a society of content creators with social media these days. I think on one hand, that's incredible, and it gives everyone the opportunity to create and have a platform and showcase their art, their funny, their music, their talents. But there is nothing more magical, I think, than just a live, just a stage and a microphone and just a live performance. And and to your what you're saying, like, that is not something that can be taught and watched on a YouTube video or a masterclass. Like, you really just need to be in the club, and it's the grind, and it's seeing people fly, it's seeing them fall right on their face. What are some of the big takeaways that if anyone's listening or you know, stand-up comic dreamers are listening of, you know, one, just maybe your best advice on crafting a set or something that you kind of remind yourself even to this day when you're crafting your set. And two, just how to kind of attack the grind.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as crafting a set, everybody's so different. Like, I've never written anything down. I've never
really.
I've never like sat down and go, okay, what am I going to talk about? I just go on stage and that's what comes out. Like, I put very little forethought into it as far as like working the words up. I do have ideas and like, oh, that's a funny idea. And then I'll go on stage and say it. And then if it gets a laugh, then I'll say it again the next night. And then I'll say it again the next night and the next night. So I get to do, like I said, 200 shows a year. So I'm constantly just writing on stage. And at this point, I can come up with an idea and go, oh, that's going to work. And I already know I know how to say it right. It's the timing and the delivery, all that is in there. But for me, it's like, I think I'm not normal in the fact that I don't write it down at all. So, but as far as being wanting to do stand-up, if there's somebody out there, like I said, find a way to go to that comedy club every night that you can and just sit there and observe and learn what that is. Because the second part of your question was about the grind. You got to know what you're getting into, right? I mean, be careful what you wish for, because if you get successful and you're not a good road person, then what does it matter? You know, I mean, the road is not an easy place. It's a lot of downtime. That's very boring.
Well, it's impressive hearing you say that you don't write things down, especially coming off of America's Got Talent as a finalist. I mean, that is seems like my worst nightmare. Like literally being on a stage with a zillion cameras and an audience and like Heidi Klum and Simon Cowell. It just seems like a very stressful situation, which you handled beautifully, obviously. I think a sign, in my opinion, of just a really great comic is one that is patient and able to like enjoy the silence for a minute. The one that takes a breath. And you're so good at that. You're so good at letting a joke land, rest, and then just like, you know, you get the audience anticipating like, oh my gosh, another good one's coming. Like you give that breath within within your work, which I think is really fucking great. But then how do you handle a situation like America's Got Talent? I mean, was that just a completely wild ride, or were you just like, this is just another gig?
Well, I mean, to me, I look at it a couple ways. Obviously, they want to know what jokes I'm going to say, so I have to give them the set, you know. But I always tell them, like, you can write this down if you want to. It's going to be something like that. It's mm-hmm. not going to be these exact words, because it's like you say about those silent moments, those moments, like, that's nothing I can think about directly. It's as soon as I think about it, it goes away. But when I'm just doing it, I say it in the time that the energy in the room is ready for it. I just feel it, and it's like, okay, here it is. And it's like just a weird timing thing that I have no idea how I do it. You know, it's weird.
Watching America's Got Talent, I always think of like the backstage area where it's just like such a random grouping of talented people. And I just imagine everyone sitting there being like, this is the, like, if the walls could talk, like just the most bizarre experience where someone's got dogs, someone's like throwing flames, someone's trying what was that experience like? What was the casual conversation like at like the lunch table or crafty?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely an eclectic group of people. you know, it's interesting because of COVID, there was certain protocols, so they didn't really have as many people all together as usual. But for the most part, it was just really cool getting to meet everybody. And, you know, the season I was on, everybody was so talented, I thought. I mean, there's a lot of amazing different acts. That's what's weird about AGT is, like, you know, last Comic Standing, I was competing against other comedians. AGT, I'm competing against, like, a little girl that can sing Pavarotti, you know? And I'm like, that's like comparing apples to carburetors or something.
Yeah, you don't want to like tell the little girl like you're going down, bitch. Like, yeah, you don't want to be like, yeah, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, you know, I'd always joke about like hip checking them in the hallway, but yeah. Oops, sorry.
Sorry. We were talking about the grind earlier, and during AGT there was a really beautiful segment where they interviewed your children, and they were just talking about how proud of you that they are, and in that moment they're like, tears are in their eyes. I mean, it was I mean, especially I haven't seen them since they were little, and now they're just growing up. But it was just such a beautiful thing. First of all, what a wonderful thing to have on video forever that you can always use as collateral and be like, see how much you love me and how proud of me you are.
Well, I should say this. That only took 5 hours of recording to get that 3 seconds of material. She was crying because she was hungry.
Well, there might have been hunger, but but also maybe slightly proud of her father. Do you feel like that was maybe was this their first time seeing you at work? Like, I know that sounds silly, but I mean, when I was little, my dad was gone a lot because he was a doctor. And when I was little, I just always thought like, well, my dad's just gone because he's busy working. And it wasn't until I was older that I obviously saw and understood what he did. And I just shifted that mentality in my mind. Like, do you think for your kids, like, had they seen your sets before? I know comedy clubs are usually for an older clientele. So was this kind of the first time that they saw like dad at work in like the coolest way ever?
You know, there's been a couple times where I had to bring them to shows. Like, I just couldn't find a babysitter or something. And they told me later, they're like, Dad, we snuck upstairs and watched your set. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, it's like, I don't have a big head.
Like, oh, no.
Oh, no. Like, you know. And then the other thing is we have that comedy radio station here in Denver. And they listen to that all the time. So they heard me on there a bunch. But that's different than seeing it on TV, obviously. But and my daughter is a big fan of AGT. I had never watched the show before the season. But
well, it was really beautiful to watch them watch you. That was really a cool experience for those watching through the screens this past year. What was your experience like being in LA during the filming? I mean, you while you're performing, you usually have such up to date stuff where literally you're talking about things that happened the day of, whether it's something that someone said to you. I feel like that's usually like a theme. Anytime I've seen your set, there's always like someone who has said something like completely ridiculous or offensive, or just you're like, how is this human person speaking right now? And why did they think that this was appropriate to come out of their mouth? In those moments, like, is there one that just sticks out, or is there one that always gets the laugh, or is there one that, like, to you, are you laughing in that moment, or are you just ever like so tired of it? Or are you like, thank you for this comedy nugget that I'm now going to use in my set?
Yeah, I mean, those nuggets are definitely gems and blessings when they come around. Things that you just, like, you could have never wrote that in a million years, but it just fell in your lap. Maybe I had to go through the actual experience to get it, but, you know, the one that I always think of like that is I was in Reno, and this guy, I pissed him off pretty bad. I don't know what I did. I'm just walking down the street and he started yelling at me and he really insulted me. He goes, you ain't got no fucking hobbies. Like, what? No hobbies. Like, come on, man. I paint. Like, come on. Like,
what a time. It's just...
Like, hobbies.
Hobbies.
He got me. He got me on that.
That one is cold. There's a lot of things that could be said, but, like, it is hard to acquire hobbies, especially as an adult with children and, you know, like, as a working parent.
I got a job, man. Shit. Like, hobbies.
I'm a working single parent, sir. Yeah. It is hard to schedule in hobbies.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I had time for hobbies.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a minute.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
And we're back.
Well, you got a lot of time for a lot of shows coming up. Are you excited to be hitting the road? I know during COVID, everyone was doing like Zoom shows. Everyone's doing like live Zooms and live Zoom concerts. Did you do any Zoom comedy shows?
I will say I did Zoom shows. I don't know if they were comedy. You know, I did quite a few shows. Yeah, at first I was very stubborn, like, I'm not doing that shit. That's not stand-up. That's not how comedy is. And then by week two, I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I need to talk to somebody. But I actually sat down and like was like, all right, dude, here's the deal. You better learn how to be funny in this format too, because this might be it for a while. So you want to be the best one there is out there, so people keep booking you. So, you know, I've done probably 20 Zoom shows now, which is a lot
for Zoom shows. Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot for sure. But I feel comfortable now and confident. I don't try to like stand up. I just sit down and do it. You know, it's a different beat, different cadence, but
yeah. Did you try to stand up in the first one?
Yeah, I tried to have a microphone and walk back and forth.
Like a full body shot with your Zoom cam.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
What a time.
And Zoom really sucks for stand up too, because you can't hear the laughter either.
Yeah, I think the only successful Zoom activity we participated in during the pandemic was there was a magician. Like there was an LA magician, which, you know, literally, I don't know how they did it, but there was like a whole thing, like magic box that showed up at your house. And then all of a sudden, like a balloon was set free and then it shows up at your door. So all I envision is like people driving all over LA, just like waiting in people's front yards to like spook them with like a mystery red balloon that's like part of a trick that you're seeing on a Zoom. It just made it was very cool, also slightly terrifying and creepy. Yeah, but it's interesting.
I don't trust magic. Fuck magic. Like, here's a balloon full of COVID for you. Great, thank you.
So you're gonna be very, very busy. I mean I would imagine that that this is similar, like you've had this experience on two very prominent, you know, television series and winning and, you know, being in the top tier. And obviously those are big waves, you know, and I think for any entertainer, any artist who works in, you know, a more kind of like spotlight arena, that there's always waves, you know, there's times when you're a little bit more in the spotlight and other times when you're kind of trucking along the side. And so what has been the
I remember having this conversation in your kitchen one time.
Yeah, probably.
I think we did talk about that. Like, just like, you know, and, you know, I'm very fortunate. I'm on a wave right now. It's great. You know, I've been paddling by the side for a few years again, but again, it's back touring again. I'm all over the map. I'm selling out shows, adding shows. You know, I'm talking to people about doing some potential TV shows that should be awesome. Yeah.
When you're in the wave, is there anything that you look back on when you were kind of idling along or in the truck? Like, I don't know how we're in a wave in a truck, but you see what I'm saying. Like, is there anything you can look back and see yourself while you're in the truck trucking along that you appreciate or that you would tell yourself or anyone who is in that position? Because I think it's always easier to hear from, like, you've had many incredible waves in your life, and this is just another one, and you're going to have more. And I know that. But I think it's always great to get advice, you know, from that perspective.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that. And thank you for saying that about, you know, the waves for all of us. You know, I look at this as a huge wave. What's the next one after this? But usually when I'm in the wave, I ain't got time to look back at anything. I'm just being tossed around, you know, just trying to survive doing the shows and being a parent and doing all that stuff. But I always just try to constantly, no matter where I am at in the wave, remember that I got here by being me and by being the person that I am, and try to maintain a level of respect for the craft, respect for the fans, respect for the work. And then when it's there, it's there. And then just know that the next wave will come eventually, and just keep doing the best you can. Like, people have said, like, you know, I'll come to a comedy club and be half full. And they're like, you perform like you were playing at the Superdome, you know? I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't I give these people the show that they came to see? And then just do that. And if you do that your whole career, people are going to be like, that guy brings it every time. So I always just try to, like, maintain that level of professionalism toward what I do.
I love that. Well, now I'm just going to be selfish in the rest of the interview and ask you to clarify some events from one, which is one of my favorite stories. And so you obviously attended my husband's bachelor party.
Yeah.
So my parents have a place in Montana. It's a cabin. It is literally, it's beautiful. It's on the top of a mountain. Like, you do not see other houses from this cabin. You are in the middle of nowhere at this cabin. And so I just would love to know, one, how did you get the tomahawks in your suitcase? And then two, can you share some of the events of, because you were the welcome wagon of the trip, if I remember correctly. And I would just really love for you to share the story from your perspective.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, some tomahawks, I fly with those all the time.
How do you talk?
So, I mean, not that many, but, I know Joe for a little while before I got invited, but I didn't really know the rest of the band or anybody. So I, you know, find out it's me and the Fray. Like, okay, this, what should I bring? I was like, a bunch of axes. Why not? So they're all musicians. They need their fingers. And I just thought it'd be like a funny gift to give everybody, just their own axe or whatever. So I think I brought like 7 tomahawks and like 1 pair of underwear, you know, that's all we needed. And, you know, you can check anything you want, basically, in a check bag. You can put a gun in there. So, you know, I always figure if there's tomahawks in there, they're more concerned about that than the weed or whatever.
Great strategy. It's very true. No one's sniffing around for weed if you see if they, you just 7, have like tomahawks,
7 axes in there. Yeah. So I brought them because I like throwing axes, and I showed the guys how to throw some axes. And again, I would just like to say that I don't know if you knew this tidbit, but I shared a queen size bed with Isaac the whole time. So I got to fulfill many people's fantasies, not mine. Not mine. Waking up to him every day, like snoring in my face, is not flattering.
It did not save your life, we could say.
No, it did not. And then, so who was it? Somebody showed up later, like they came in a couple of days.
I think it was one of our buddies. I forget which one of Joe's friends from Denver as well. I forget which one, but yes. So there was someone who was showing up late.
Well, and I had also not just brought the axes, but I also brought a couple of different outfits, like characters. And
as one does.
And I have been doing this like real backwoods trashy guy. And then they went to go get the buddy from the airport. And I said, when you come back, you guys don't know me. Just pretend like you've never met me before. And sure enough, they pull up, they come sit by the fire having some beer. And then I've been just laying in the woods waiting for him, and then I just come out of, like, into the firelight, like, what you boys doing? And they're like, oh, hi, you know, and Joe's like, hey, man, and he's just playing along. I mean, I was ruthless. I kicked over their cooler and took a beer. I was like, you boys keep it down. I got my people in there. I'm trying to sleep. And they were playing it up good, but the guy that just showed up was like,
terrified.
He was ready to fight, you know? He was like, we got to protect ourselves. And then like, I went back in the woods. I was like, I have to come back up here. It's not going to be pretty. And you're just like, I just hid in the woods for a while. Just watched them like, oh, my God, what was that? Oh, and the poor new guy just did not. He said, we should call the cops. We should call the cops. And then finally, I did reveal myself later. Like, I tormented him for like an hour in the woods. And then after we revealed that we're buddies, that I don't think that guy ever really liked me after that. He's like, I don't trust this guy. Like, the whole rest of the trip, he just didn't say anything to me. He's like, nope, you're an asshole for sure.
I think that was the logic that when Joe's telling me this story, I'm like, wait, but you're all going to be hanging out the rest of the time after you scare the shit out of this guy. Oh man. And I just, the whole thing tickled me. One, the commitment of you just waiting and lurking in the woods is fantastic. And knowing like how many beers I'm sure you gentlemen consumed around the fire pit that evening. And just, I mean, the commitment to the, and I also just love that you showed up to a bachelor party with tomahawks and characters, just ready to go.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Might as well see what I can do to the fray.
Well, I love your commitment. I love your, you just fueled by your passion, your talents. You are fucking hilarious, and as a friend and obviously as a comedian. Josh, thank you so much for doing this. I'm so glad we finally got to make this happen. I'm so glad I'm so happy for you and your incredible year. I'm not surprised by it, because I've just watching you for years. I'm just thrilled for you. Obviously, everyone can go to joshblue.com to see your upcoming touring dates, and they can follow you on social media as well. Where can everyone follow you?
Yeah, just Josh Blue Comedy is all my social, so Instagram and Facebook and all that. And yeah, I also have a bunch of specials on Amazon Prime right now, so if you got that, you can watch them for free, or lots of other awesome things going on. Just check in at the website. And it's so good to see you, honestly. I miss you guys so much, and I can't wait to come out to Nashville and see what you guys are doing out there.
Well, we're on 4 acres, so I'm expecting tomahawks as our housewarming present.
I'll bring them.
Okay, good.
A whole tomahawk for the family. Yes.
Perfect. We had a new baby. She needs a tomahawk too. Can't leave her
I'm
out.
Not gonna forget her. Dear
challenged. I'm just so in awe of comics, how they can, and the grind is the fascinating thing to me, because I think musicians obviously have a grind, you know, where they're on stage every single night performing and singing, but comics, that's just you. It's just you and a microphone on a stage, bringing a whole room full of people together and laughing. And I think that that's what we need. I think that, like, not only, Josh, are you so funny, but just the gift of laughter that you gave the world in this past season of America's Got Talent. We all needed it. It was fantastic. The world needs you, Josh. Thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast. Again, check out joshblue.com or at Josh Blue on his social media. Please go see his shows. You will not be disappointed, except by the fact that you're going to have to hold your stomachs in from laughing so hard and just try not to pee your pants. That's probably going to be the most difficult part of the show because he's hilarious. Josh, I adore you. Thank you so much for joining us. We will have an all new episode of Directionally Challenged waiting for you next week.
Directionally Challenged is a production of Pineapple Productions.
Producer, Melissa DeMonts. Post-production sound by Chris Henry.
Music by Joe King.
And advertising partnership with Acast.